This is Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and the places and the perfumes of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
Yeah, feel free to smell some stuff too if you want. Like, it's like kind of the fun part about being in this business.
Matthew Sanchez is a perfumer. He's about to show us how to blend three scents that smell like black tea, leather, and patchouli. We're in a workshop in Chinatown, and in front of us is a wall of shelves holding small glass vials of liquid scents.
Let's get like a nice sized beaker.
The business of independent perfume is growing fast in Los Angeles, and it's very different from commercial perfume, which is dominated by big European fragrance names such as Dior and Chanel. Sanchez is from Moreno Valley, and he's part of a new generation of local perfumers getting international attention.
In the huge landscape of America, you are definitely seeing like a renaissance of perfumery centering in here in LA.
With an industry hub growing here in Southern California, what does that mean for the future of perfume? Well, it's starting to look more like LA, becoming more diverse, more accessible, and more artistic. Here's KCRW's Megan Jamerson.
5 years ago, Matthew Sanchez was doing a very ordinary thing at the dentist's office, mindlessly flipping through a GQ magazine, killing time, when an article caught his eye and kind of changed his life.
Here are 10 perfumers and like their famous creations. And I was like, perfumer, like, what do you mean by that? Like, I'll be honest, I feel silly thinking about it now, but I never thought of like a perfumery or even a perfumer as like an occupation, a career, you know?
At the time, he was looking for a creative outlet to satisfy his artistic side. Sanchez studied math at UCLA and was now doing number crunching during the day as a banking analyst. He thought to himself, perfume sounds like it could be a great mix of science and art, and it's something he's always enjoyed in his personal life.
Then I was like, wait a minute. Like, everyone featured, of the 10 people, only 3 were women. But of all 10, everyone was white and everyone was older.
For generations now, the perfume industry has been very European and white. Sanchez found himself wondering,
is fragrance one of those industries that desperately needs some disruption, some diversity, some youth, you know?
Sitting in that dentist's waiting room, he made a decision.
I'm crafty, I'm, you know, scrappy, I'm resourceful. I wonder if I could do this. And if I could do it, then I can kind of be a part of the solution, right?
He started an apprenticeship in San Francisco, where after work, he shadowed a local perfumer and assisted her at her workshop learning techniques. With that new knowledge, he launched his first signature perfume in 2020 called Celadon, and it's inspired by his multiracial heritage. His dad's side is from Mexico, so he included the smell of the drink horchata. His mother's side is from Ghana. And then there is a nod to his childhood in Moreno Valley.
Ooh, yes, I smell the orange.
Yeah, that's the Sicilian blood orange that we put in.
And his perfume is getting some serious attention. It was a finalist in the Art and Olfaction Awards. They're kind of like the Indie Film Spirit Awards, but for independent perfume. These awards were started by Saskia Wilson Brown in L.A., and each year, a panel of industry people blind judge the fragrances submitted. She says it's exceptional that Sanchez was a finalist, his first time submitting an entry.
I mean, that is no joke. I mean, it's hugely competitive. We have stuff being sent in from all over the world.
The reason it's important that these awards started in L.A. is because of France's dominance in the industry. The only place to formally study the art of perfume is in the south of France. And like you would imagine, it's very elite. When Wilson Brown started the awards 10 years ago, the agenda was to make the art of perfume accessible to people like Sanchez or anyone else who might be interested. And that vision has since transformed the LA scene into something bigger than just a few boutiques.
And that's like a bajillion times changed. I mean, LA has become a capital of independent perfume.
Besides the awards, Wilson Brown also opened the Institute for Art and Olfaction. It's like an art studio, but instead of learning painting or music, you learn to mix fragrances.
We used to call us like the punk rock perfumers, and certainly that is the ethos we still abide by. Like, we're specifically non-commercial.
No offense to France, but Wilson Brown had a different idea.
The independent scene in perfumery is interesting because it can get a little bit wilder. There's a little bit more sort of freedom, I think, because you're not really beholden to these sort of, you know, mass market appeal.
One of the ways the Institute is making the art of perfume more accessible is through their weekly introductory classes. First-time students pay $50 and returners pay $15 for a two-hour class. And here's another way this scene is a little punk rock. The Institute is on a back street in Chinatown. It's kind of a if-you-know-you-know place.
And you are going to flip your page and find the formula sheet.
On a Wednesday evening, the class is sold out. There are 10 students of different ages and ethnic backgrounds, and they are watching the instructor, Julianne Lee, write out a formula on a chalkboard.
And then you're working with cinnamon. And that's at 1%.
Lee is an independent perfumer. She's been involved with the Institute since 2014. She first arrived here on a date to take a class. She found herself surrounded by other people in a place where they could obsess over scent together, which was pretty great.
It's funny because fragrance is obviously like romantic, beautiful. It's about beauty, but it's also like very nerdy. It's, like, extremely nerdy.
There was this one time they tested out the 18th century way of capturing fragrance from plants.
I remember putting a call out on my Instagram, like, who knows where the jasmine bushes are? I'm running out. Because I was, like a bandit going around to people's yards here in L.A. And then I developed some sort of allergies. Like, I was sneezing like crazy because my kitchen was full of like jasmine and pollen, and yeah, it was a little wild, so I had to cut the experiment short.
Part of the reason Lee feels like anyone can learn the art of perfume is because she eventually decided to go to perfume school in France.
Yeah, I thought there might be a secret key to help me be a perfumer, like the perfumer of my dreams, you know? But it was really interesting to go there and find that there was no key.
She says she learned that in order to master this art form, it just takes hard work.
It is just about the amount of time and dedication that you spend to the craft. It is certainly a craft.
A craft that here in LA is available to anyone. For KCRW, I'm Megan J. Merson.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Former West Hollywood City Council member Lindsay Horvath has emerged the winner in the race to succeed Sheila Kuehl in the 3rd District LA Board of Supervisors. She defeated State Senator Bob Hertzberg. The 3rd District stretches from WeHo to Malibu and from the coast all the way to the northern San Fernando Valley. Horvath is the youngest woman ever elected to the Board of Supervisors. Her win means all 5 districts in the county will continue to be represented by women. Some of the challenges, of course, facing the board include homelessness, housing affordability, transportation, sustainability, public safety. There are a lot. Lindsay Horvath has promised to tackle many of these issues. She's with us right now to talk about how she plans on getting started after being sworn in this coming Monday. Supervisor-elect, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Congratulations to you. I do want to start with homelessness and the most recent count of 69,000 people without housing in L.A. County. That's the most recent count, more than 13,000 of whom are in District 3. And we're talking about areas like Venice and Hollywood, West L.A., where the Veterans Administration is particularly affected by this crisis. What is the first thing you intend to do as supervisor to tackle this?
Well, we have to work hand in glove with the city of Los Angeles in particular, especially in this district, making sure that the services and resources are meeting people in their neighborhoods as is intended. But we'll work with each and every individual city to make sure that the services that they need, the support that they need from the county, they're actually experiencing.
You're in District 3 for the Board of Supervisors. I know there's a lot of overlap, or at least some overlap, with District 11 of the LA City Council. And in that race, Tracy Park was recently elected to Mike Bonin's seat, right?
Yes.
She campaigned on enforcing the city's anti-camping ordinance and even expanding it. How do you imagine working with her on that issue?
Well, of course, we have to work together as best we can in every district. That's what the voters ask of us. And my hope is that we will work together well. 4118 needs the supportive services in order for it to be effective. Otherwise, it's just pushing people around from corner to corner.
That's the anti-camping ordinance, right?
That's correct. And right. It is a city ordinance. So enforcement of a city ordinance is up to the city of Los Angeles. But in terms of the services and support, my hope is that it will not be a tool just to punish people or shoo people away, but instead that we will be able to lead with services and care, which has been the county's model, and making sure that that we're actually getting the help to the people who need it most. That's what we've done in my community, which I spoke a lot about on the campaign trail, making sure that we're actively outreaching to people every day of the week, connecting them with the services and support that they need, making sure that they are actually followed through the system, getting them into healthcare, into housing, mental health care, addiction recovery, whatever services are needed. And I, in fact, was just on the phone this morning with the lead in West Hollywood talking about some of our latest efforts to make sure we can start translating that as quickly as possible into the county.
You know, we're now, what is it, 5 years, I think, into Measure H, which was approved by voters in 2017. And we're talking billions of dollars in funding to combat homelessness and obviously to help solve the problem. And the crisis persists. I mean, this is a humanitarian crisis for sure.
Yes. And those dollars are essential to making sure that people get the help that they need. But I heard on the campaign trail, and certainly understand it, that if you don't see the results of those resources being invested in your community and invested specifically in this issue, people are not going to be likely to continue funding services that they do not see the help for.
Well, that's where I'm going next is, I mean, what do you think is not working if we're throwing so much money at this?
Well, I have seen and heard that there are different types of street teams that the county deploys, but they don't share information. So the same person can be contacted sometimes even several times a week by different teams who do not share information about how they've contacted that person, what services and support were provided. There isn't a lot of transparency in terms of how the money is being spent. And so that's something I'm very much interested in instituting is, you know, if we can get to a weekly meeting that indicate where services have gone, what money has been invested, to what end, so we aren't waiting years to see if the results are actually working. We can start to make choices in real time about where to spend resources in order to get the results that we're looking for.
We could talk about homelessness, obviously, in LA County for hours because there's just so much there. But obviously, there are other things to talk about, too, including crime. You were one of the city officials in West Hollywood who voted to cut several sheriff deputy positions in favor of hiring unarmed security ambassadors. It was a polarizing move for which you have faced some backlash. Do you plan to continue that kind of effort on the county board?
So what we actually did in West Hollywood was substantially increase funding into public safety, making sure that we had the right kind of response and the right kind of resources for the issues that we're seeing on the ground. And so to that end, I do intend to make sure that we are meeting the needs of each community with the resources that the county provides. You know, in the West Valley, for example, we've heard a lot around issues of street racing, and there was just another tragic accident on the PCH in Malibu even. And so that's not going to be solved with an unarmed security ambassador. So we have to make sure that the right kinds of resources are being deployed, that we're spending money on things that are actually keeping people safe, and hopefully that we have some change in the department. I know we have Sheriff-elect Luna coming into leadership as well, making sure that we have change in the department. So instead of spending our dollars on liability costs related to issues within the department, we're spending those dollars to enhance safety services and make sure that people are being kept safe in their neighborhoods with the right kind of response.
You've made sustainability a big part of your campaign. Making LA County more sustainable in part, you know, means getting gasoline-powered cars off the road, making public transit more accessible. Metro ridership is down, the buses for sure, but also on the trains, the light rail and heavy rail trains. What are you planning to do to try to reach, you know, these really tough carbon neutrality goals and to get more people off the road?
Well, we have to expand its service to places where people want to go. We have to make sure that, for example, the rail lines that were proposed all the way back to Measure R, but also through as recently as Measure M, that those lines are actually realized to get people where they want to go. The Crenshaw Northern Extension, which I have been working on for many years now, is one such alignment that wasn't even supposed to be discussed until the 2040s. And we said, no, the need is urgent. We must move quickly. This, when it is constructed, this light rail line will have the highest ridership of any light rail line in the country. So we can't wait.
This is something that I've asked other supervisors as well. And it's fascinating to me because there are 10 million people in LA County and five supervisors. So each supervisorial district is about 2 million people. How do you wrangle, you know, so much overlapping territory and the fact that you've got 2 million people in your district? I mean, that's a lot.
We really need to think about what is the best way for this county government to run and function to deliver the services that people are counting on. You know, in my understanding of the history of the board, there was a period of time where there were 7 members of the board, whether it's 7 or doubling the number. Increased representation will do wonders in terms of making sure that that we're helping Angelenos get the services and support that they're counting on from the county.
The swearing in is on Monday. Lindsay Horvath, LA County Supervisor-elect for the 3rd District. Again, congratulations to you. Thanks for coming on and good luck.
Thank you so much.
More of Greater LA Now from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanksgiving is over. The leftovers, well, they're getting stale, especially that stuffing. Ugh. You might also have some unused fruits and vegetables decaying on your kitchen counter. A bouquet, perhaps, of seasonal flowers in disarray or drying, maybe. If so, a couple of art shows in LA right now might look something like your dining area or your kitchen. And one of them is called The Fruit Vendor. It features ceramic fruits and vegetables in varying states of freshness. The other show, called Arrangements, has some topsy-turvy flower sculptures. Well, Lindsay Preston-Zappas is here to tell us more. She's founder and editor-in-chief of Carla, the Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Hey, Lindsay.
Hey, Steve.
So a couple of shows, colorful objects from nature, flowers, and food, but very different takes, right?
Yeah, exactly. So one of them is called Fruit Vendor, like you said, by the artist Ryan Flores at Moskowitz Base Gallery. And he creates fruit and vegetables out of ceramics. And everywhere you look, there's like radishes on the walls. And there's a big table in the center that's just filled with this huge bounty. And the artist is using layers and layers of ceramic glaze to create really detailed textures and surfaces on these pieces. And then up the street at Nino Meyer Gallery is Tony Mattelli's show called Arrangements. And here the artist is making these bronze casts of flower bouquets and painting them to look really hyper-realistic. They look like the real thing. But then each bouquet, so we have like orchids and lilies, is actually arranged upside down, and it bounces on this really precarious way on the pedestal, you know, like one orchid holding the whole thing up. So it's this really interesting trick of the eye and this kind of play with gravity as well.
Even though, you know, these are sculptures, I was getting still life painting vibes.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, I think both artists are definitely playing with that tradition of still life paintings. You know, I think often in still life, we see symbolism come into play with the specific objects that the painters include. So flowers, for instance, can symbolize impermanence. You know, it's like this thing that's caught and cut at the height of its beauty, but ultimately is dying and like will decay. And then fruit often symbolizes those kind of mortality themes, but also can symbolize fertility or abundance. So, you know, I think when artists choose to utilize objects like this, they're definitely tapping into that tradition and pulling into some of that kind of symbolic meaning. But, you know, I think here they're putting kind of a cheeky spin on those depictions as well.
My mom always told me, don't send people flowers because they die. Send them a plant instead.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And fruits, by the way, they do the same thing when they sit on a kitchen counter for a long period of time. And in Ryan Flores is the fruit vendor. Some of them are decaying. Some are cut open. Some are intact. But, you know, for some, Flores has kind of changed the dimensions and shapes. What does it all mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's really interesting because you go through the show and at first you're like, wow, look at all this fruit. It's beautiful, bountiful. And it does have this kind of realistic look. But then as you're looking closer, some are enlarged. Like I remember a particularly long carrot on one table, or there are just these pineapples that have really tall spikes that are just like totally fantastical. But it kind of toys with you because, again, he's using this realistic style and some are kind of to scale and proportion. But then, you know, similarly, as you walk through, you also start to notice that some of the fruit is kind of turning and it's rotting at one end. So, you know, if we think back to those still life themes of decay and mortality, I think that's definitely coming through in this exhibition. But then there's also this kind of like subtle surrealism or something.
That's what I was going to say, surrealism, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, in terms of the scale and the shape, that's like very playful and vibrant, and it's kind of mixed in. So, you know, I think in a way the work is caught between fantasy and the surrealism, but also this idea of like mortality as well.
Let's talk about arrangements again. This is the Tony Mattelli show. It's not just about floral arrangements. There's a sculpture of himself in the gallery as well. What's going on with that? And what does that have to do with this concept of arrangement?
Yeah, I was standing about 3 inches from the face and I like thought he was going to start talking to me. It was so scary, like so
that's
realistic.
Creepy. That's creepy.
Yeah. And then he's wearing a sweatshirt and khakis and both of them are smeared with paint. So it's definitely like a portrait of the artist here. So, you know, you're at the show, you're kind of marveling about how lifelike the sculpture is. And then you realize that his head has actually been like cut off and is starting to slide down just a little bit.
All right, now that's just gross. I don't even know what's happening with that.
I think there's a kind of interesting philosophical point the artist is making here, sort of implying human experience as an arrangement, you know, the same way that these flowers are. Like we all sort of exist in relation to our environment and the world that we build around us.
Well, Tony Mattelli's Arrangements, and by the way, Tony still has his head, thankfully, is at Nino Meyer Gallery 1 in West Hollywood. Ryan Flores is the fruit vendor, is at Moskowitz Base on La Brea in Mid-City. Lindsay Preston-Zapp is founder and editor in chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Lindsay, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, I'll meet a woman who's undergoing treatment for traumatic brain injury with ketamine. You probably know it as Special K. But therapists say it can really help with trauma, including PTSD and depression. That's tomorrow on GLA. Check us out anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. Share what you have on your mind. Tell us your story. Want to share something maybe from your part of Greater LA? Do it there at the website at kcrw.com/GreaterLA or subscribe to the podcast at the website. Nihar Patel, Zeke Reed, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all had hands and ears on this evening's show. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your time and attention. Have a great night.